This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And today I'm with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. She is the proud possessor of a RD credential, registered dietitian, as well as a master's degree in the field of nutrition. And additional you can add additional initials if you like. You have another appellation.
Certified dietitian nutritionist in the state of New York.
CCDN?
No, CDN.
CDN, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so a lot of initials. First of all, apologies are in order because planning a Facebook Live event, which is still in the offing.
Yeah.
But due to a conflict, an unforeseen conflict, we decided to reschedule that. So it's not canceled. It is merely postponed. And a couple of considerations. First of all, it was going to coincide with Game 3 of the ALDS conference championship game for the pennant between my beloved Yankees and Houston.
Go Yankees!
Yeah, but so now, that alone would not have been the only consideration in terms of canceling it. I mean, first of all, I thought it's a little sacrilegious to do this because of Yankee fans might be conflicted. Now,
We don't want them to be conflicted.
We don't want them to be conflicted. Like, what do we do? Watch the Facebook Live event or watch the Yankee game? Clearly, the Yankee game takes precedence over a Facebook Live event, even of such high caliber as what we would be doing. Another consideration was that I personally wanted to see the game.
You wanted to see the game, right?
And so
right.
I might be distracted, and maybe I was, to be checking the scores, in between questions. You, Layla, came up with a pretty interesting observation, which is a practical consideration. It's like, we were planning to do this at 3:30 p.m.
On a Tuesday
weekday,
afternoon.
Right. Which is fine for retirees, for people who work from home. But for
stay-at-home parents, for homemakers, for... Right. People who are shift workers, maybe, but they're sleeping.
Exactly. Maybe they're getting ready to go to the swing shift, that starts at, in the evening or something.
Yeah.
But actually there are people who work 9 to 5.
Right.
And so.
Kind of like us.
Right. Exactly. People in the workaday world. Who don't have the luxury to stay at home in the middle of the day and listen to a Facebook Live event or watch it because it's actually it's in real time, both audio and video, via stream on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do this during evening hours in the future. So TBA to be announced.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will provide us with a more inclusive audience. So we're trying to figure out the logistics of that, and we'll let you know. We'll keep you appraised.
Yeah.
But here we be with our usual format, which is audio.
And now, just to mention, it would be convenient if we were in California. 3:30 for people on the East Coast would be 6:30.
Right.
Remember back when we did the lectures, normally we started them around 6 o'clock.
Right.
So it gives an opportunity for everybody to be available. right. by 6. Most right. people are leaving
we
work
did
at 5,
live
5:30.
Lectures. So.
Yeah.
So, to be announced, we will let you know. Mm-hmm. And thank you for that practical consideration, because somebody's got to offer some practical advice occasionally here, mm-hmm. and that came from your side on this issue. So, before we get to questions, by the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. You know, you get knee pain, you get hip pain, mm-hmm. And what's the solution? You get a steroid shot.
Oh, I was going to say a knee replacement, a hip replacement, but yeah, first a steroid shot.
Yeah, first, you know, why not? You know, put the fire out. You know, you've got inflammation in your joint, and that's that's done millions and millions of times mm-hmm. across the United States. And some of you may have already experienced that, you know, because as you get older, you know, hip and knee pain, that does crop up.
Yeah.
So it's thought to be, you know, before we undertake surgery, let's do something, quote, conservative, and we'll get some relief. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my general take on that has been beware, because what happens with the steroid shot is you get a bit of a fool's paradise. You get a reduction in inflammation, but you also get a real reduction in the healing capacity of the body, because inflammation is the body's way of bringing blood and reparative mm-hmm. substances mm-hmm. to an area which enables
the healing to take place.
Healing. And so, so to completely shut down healing, you know, we know that people, for example, who are on high-dose steroids mm-hmm. Have a higher incidence of infection. Their wounds don't close.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the thing to do if you have a fracture, because you'll have non-union of the bone. But yet it's common practice.
Yeah.
And it's easy. Go to the doctor, and the doctor puts a needle into your knee or into your hip or into the affected area.
Mm-hmm.
Story based on a new study. Common joint pain treatment may be more harmful than thought. Well, I was upfront with that. I mean, I think I was ahead of the curve on that, because I don't...
Definitely.
You know, it also, the other thing is there's a cumulative effect, is that the more shots you have, you know, maybe you get one, you get some relief, and you do mm-hmm. two, and you get a little less relief. The third, fourth, the relief may be minimal. Mm-hmm. But after many, many injections, you actually can deteriorate the bone, because as we know that steroids... they create osteoporosis.
Yes.
There's people who are on prednisone, for example, for a long time, they have very bad osteoporosis for higher risk of fracture.
And they could have higher blood sugars. They can get diabetes as well. The moon face effect.
A little less
steroids.
So when it's localized, mm-hmm. but you do get a bit of a systemic leakage of the steroid mm-hmm. into your bloodstream systemically. But the idea is to put it in the knee. Hopefully it goes in the knee or in
right.
the hip.
It stays in the knee.
So what this doctor is saying, he is lead author of the study, Dr. Ali Ghermazi, a professor of radiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. He says that the intra-articular, that's into the joint, corticosteroid injections in the hips and knees are not as safe as we thought. Hmm. He published in a paper in the journal Radiology. It's estimated that more than 30 million Americans have osteoarthritis. It's almost ubiquitous. That's an aging phenomenon.
Sure.
It is also related, I think, to diet to some extent. It's also related to
inflammation. Yes.
It's related to overactivity, but it is actually alleviated by moderate activity. You know,
yes.
maybe if you're an ultra marathoner, you might pound
right.
your knees and hips into oblivion.
The cartilage gets compromised, or they don't eat a healthy diet that would support cartilage repair.
You get bone on bone. Yeah. There may even be a bit of an autoimmune component.
Yes,
that
like rheumatoid arthritis.
Like rheumatoid arthritis. They now mm-hmm. realize that. Okay, so they say they did one study of more than 16,500 patients who underwent knee or hip joint replacement. Half had received corticosteroid injections the prior 2 years.
Hmm.
In this paper, Ghermazi's team reviewed existing literature on corticosteroid injections for osteoarthritis. They looked at data on 459 patients at Boston Medical Center mm-hmm. Who received 1 to 3 corticosteroid injections of the hip or knee in 2018. They found that 8% of patients developed complications, including cartilage loss, stress fractures, bone deterioration, and joint destruction in the 2 to 15 months following the injection. It says the rate of complications surprised Ghermazi. This is from an NBC News report. who added the figure may actually be an underestimate because 218 of the patients did not have follow-up imaging tests to assess the health of their joints. So they may have missed it. This may have been the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
Patients may report temporary pain relief from the corticosteroid injections. So the injections may be detrimental in the long run.
Hmm.
So, you know, what's the alternative? The alternative, you know, there are many, you know, I can't tell you that, you know, if you've got terribly deteriorated joints, that taking glucosamine is going to fix your joints.
Yeah.
So if you have a tear, you know, so for example, you may have a tear of one of the ligaments, you know, like an ACL tear, that is sometimes something that you can rehab through physical therapy, but sometimes you require a surgical fix.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, there are meniscal tears, and meniscal tears are often amenable to arthroscopic surgery.
Yes.
Now, arthroscopic surgery itself is problematic because if you got a really arthritic knee, I mean, it's a minor surgery, it's a quick in and out. If you are a young athlete with a discrete tear, that tear can be fixed. But if your knee is, if the cartilage is all degenerated, they can, the results of arthroscopic surgery are not that good. So it seems to be, to some extent, age-related.
Sure.
You know.
Pounding.
Yeah.
Not having a diet that supports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked, I was doing a spin class this morning, and actually the instructor didn't show up.
Oh.
So the people were there.
They said, let's start?
So we all did it together. And I just ended up, you know, there wasn't like loud music or anything. So I just talked to the guy next to me. And, you know, we got talking. And he said he'd had the surgery for meniscus. And I said, you know, how long ago was that? And he said, 5 years ago. I said, how did it turn out? He said, it was great. He says, I'm perfect.
Great.
But the guy looked like he was in his 50s.
So he
and
younger.
He was told that he had good cartilage, except that he'd had a specific injury.
Okay.
You know, and there was some tear. So, I mean, there, a steroid injection would be ameliorate that, but if still there's a hunk of meniscus that's sort of impinging within the knee joint, or say a labrum tear in the, that's the A-rod injury. You know, A-rod, you played for the Yankees. Had a labrum tear.
And it was that required part of surgery.
And that's just like, yeah, that's just like removing a piece of torn material within the hip cartilage.
I see.
And so, anyway, it's interesting. So, you know, again, this is...
Beware the cortisone shot.
There's so many procedures that are standard procedures in medicine that we have to be wary about. And that's, I think, you know, one of the themes of intelligent medicine is that, you know, we're critical of conventional medicine when there's excess and where we celebrate its successes when there's a high-tech fix for certain condition.
So we would recommend prevention, if anything, preventing the deterioration of cartilage, taking good care of your joints, having a daily mug of bone broth in case, you know, in place of one of your cups of coffee or tea even. Drink your coffee, drink your tea. Also have a mug of bone broth or start your dinner or your lunch with a bowl of consomme. Something like that. Something from scratch, a broth made from scratch. It confers its benefits via gelatin, collagen. All of that is the is one of the best ways to support your cartilage.
And speaking of this, there's balance in this article because they say they got a statement from the Arthritis Foundation from a spokesperson that a healthy lifestyle remains the key to managing osteoarthritis. They say, quote, exercise is really one of the best things that can be done. Research indicates that exercise helps ease pain, improve mobility and strength of muscles around the joints, because if you have wobbly joints, you know, you want to keep the, you know, I had a little thing with my shoulder and, you know, it was like, you know, to get a steroid injection, go to an orthopedist, you know, get a little operation. So I decided not to do that. And I've been doing rotator cuff rehab.
PT.
On my own, based on suggestions by my personal trainer. And it's great. It's been really great. I was having a little catch when I was swimming. And it was a little aggravating. But it got better. It abated. And it, especially for shoulders, which are very hard to operate on successfully, physical therapy is a good thing. I spoke to a friend, and the guy said, "Oh yeah, I had a rotator cuff thing, and mm-hmm. I went to like the top rotator cuff surgeon." Mm-hmm. He was highly recommended, and he actually looked at me and said, "No, don't get surgery. I could do this, but you don't need it." Which is a great thing for a surgeon to say.
Yeah.
He says, just rehab it. And then the guy, and I said, well, how'd it work out? He says, I don't bench press 300 pounds anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not straining. I'm just doing moderate weights, low volume, high rep, lots of reps.
Lots of reps, slower weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Another thing, besides the population, baby boomers getting older, and maybe that's a reason we're seeing more osteoarthritis, another reason, Dr. Hoffman, we're seeing a lot more osteoarthritis is due to the low-fat diet. Don't eat that chicken skin, we were told. Well, where do you think we get collagen?
Collagen, yeah.
Oh, and all of that.
That's true.
So, yes, eat the chicken skin, of course, unless you don't like it.
And the pro-inflammatory effects of sugar.
Exactly, yeah,
right.
All
which
of
is,
that.
You've got
so
it.
Diet has
when you
everything
don't eat fat,
to do
you
with...
gravitate towards sugar. Mm-hmm. All right. Hyaluronic acid injections, controversial. Sometimes they help the knee. A little cushioning into the knee can help. Stem cells.
What about Synvisc?
Stem cells, Synvisc is hyaluronic acid.
Is hyaluronic acid.
And then there's stem cells, which they're making progress towards, although some studies show that they do a little better than placebo. And then there's PRP, platelet-rich plasma, which is taking your own blood, spinning it down, and then injecting it back in for a healing effect. There's some evidence that that might work.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very
anyway,
interesting.
So look. We just discussed this because this is such a common problem.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take some questions.
Actually, first, Dr. Hoffman, we have a comment from Joe.
Okay.
Joe says, just an FYI, there's an American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association risk calculator that is a joke.
I agree.
Joe says, I plugged in a blood pressure of 120 over 80, an HDL...
Normal.
An HDL of 40... That's a little low. A total cholesterol of 170.
That's great.
Yeah. My age is 69 and I don't smoke.
Yeah, but that's the key. You're an old guy.
Right. The calculator told me that I have a high risk and need a moderate to heavy dose of statins. Really?
Right. They stack the deck.
Yeah, they...
And they don't ask
relevant
questions.
So they took his age.
Yeah, they took his age.
And
they said, hey, dude, you're old. Statin.
Statin time.
And even worse, because they ask for race, if you're African American, almost, you know,
absolutely 100%. Statin time.
Yeah,
right. The risk factors are different.
African American males. Mm-hmm. And I did it for myself just for the hell of it. And my cholesterol was a little high. It was like, I think it was like 210 or 220. But the HDL was like 70.
Terrific.
So they didn't ask, you know, anything about, you know, what's your hemoglobin A1C? What's your C-reactive protein? What's your...
What are your triglycerides?
Even what's your height and weight.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's a big factor.
Which is protective.
Mm-hmm.
They said, what was the phrase used here? Moderate to heavy?
Yeah. You told me that the calculator said I have a high risk and need a moderate to heavy dose of statins.
That's what's hit to me. It's like, whoa. It was like this red, like in red. It was you need, go immediately.
Go immediately, get Lipitor.
It's like, you know,
oh my gosh.
Go to your local emergency room, you know, and get some. And So I have a counterpoint to that, and that is actually, it was just, this is an embargoed story, but it's being released today. So we're, you know, embargoed stories, they actually send it to people like me, and they say, get ready for the story, but you can only talk about it on such and such a date. So today's the day. It's embargoed for today. For most healthy people, benefits of statins may be marginal at best. So what's healthy? Well, that's a subjective term.
Yeah.
But for low-risk groups, they may be an example of low-value care. Low-value care means it takes, like, you know, you have to treat, like, 100 to 200 people to get one person to benefit.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would have side effects. There's this high risk of type 2 diabetes with this. Aches and pains
women.
For some,
mm-hmm.
Cognitive problems for some,
possible congestive heart failure that happens when your CoQ10 levels are depleted.
Yeah. I'll be talking next week to one of the real pioneers in CoQ10 research, Dr. Peter. His father was the pioneer of CoQ10, Per Langen. The son is Peter Langen. And I'm going to talk to him about rather devastating effects on CoQ10
yes.
of statins. And what he found was that people on statins sometimes ended up with very severe congestive heart failure, which could be alleviated with cessation of statins and using CoQ10 using ubiquinol. So,
which is good news, but goodness, what a side effect.
They said the researchers examined the benefits of statins using only primary prevention data for people taking statins for 1 to 5 years with an average age of 62 to 69. So this is relevant.
Ah, and he's 69, Joe.
Overall, they found significant reductions in death from any cause, vascular deaths, and major coronary or vascular events. However, when the data were analyzed according to baseline risk of developing cardiovascular disease, most outcomes were not statistically significant. Quote, raising uncertainty about the benefits of statin for primary prevention. So let's define some terms here.
Primary
versus
prevention.
Secondary prevention.
Yeah.
You know the proverbial expression, you know, shut the barn door after the horse gets out?
Yeah.
That's secondary prevention.
Yes. You've already had a heart attack.
You have a heart attack. You've had a stent.
Yes.
You know, Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, 100%,
he's going to be put on a statin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless he's like the biggest refusenik, he is going to be prescribed that because he's had a stent. That's standard practice. And it's acknowledged that it prevents secondary events.
Yes, yes.
But let's say a guy like this guy, you know, maybe his HDL is a little low. He's an older guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the heck? Take it, you know, like an aspirin prevention.
Yeah.
Marginal benefits. I don't know too much about this guy, but, you know, if he's one of our listeners, he's probably a healthy exerciser, although he's 69.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's probably in pretty good shape. So, what they're saying here is that the authors argue that the prescription use and reimbursement of statins in primary prevention, quote, warrants more careful consideration. That's sort of moderate researcher talk for tain't worth it. But when they say warrants more careful consideration, that's the sort of soft-spoken way of saying it's garbage.
Yeah. Primary prevention, meaning you've never had a cardiac event, you've not had a heart attack, you've had nothing. And they're using the statin as a preventive measure. But
so here it is. The number of people that would need to be treated to prevent one major cardiovascular event also went up substantially from 40 people in the lowest risk in 1987 guidelines to 400 at the lowest risk in the 2016 guidelines.
Wow.
So what they mean is that there's been what's called diagnosis creep, diagnosis creep, which means that for every reissuing of the guidelines, more and more people are thought to be eligible. The research examined the effects of guideline changes on cardiovascular disease prevention in older people in Ireland from 1987 to 2016 found the proportion of over 50s who would have been eligible for statins increased from 8%, just 8% in 1987, to get this, 61%.
Ah!
And this is, we're talking about older people, 62 to 69, okay.
So 30 years later.
I am an older person per that criterion. I don't really feel that way, but I just had a birthday, so it reminded me. To 61% of the Irish population in that age group would be with the new 2016 guidelines.
Yeah.
The guidelines keep getting more and more.
And
the guidelines are reflected in these little plugins.
That's true.
I think most of these plugins are garbage.
Yeah.
There are some plugins which are interesting where you can get your EBT heart scan plugged in. And these are called what are called MESA calculators.
MESA?
MESA calculators. It's an acronym that stands for the name of the study.
So do you plug in your calcium score?
You plug in your calcium score and your cholesterol and whether you have hypertension and whether you have high cholesterol and blah, 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 and your age and your sex and your race. And you get a risk thing. Now, what's interesting, when you use that calculator and you compare the effect when you check the box, I'm on a statin or I'm not on a statin, the difference sometimes isn't that great. And when it's great is when you have a lot of plaque, when you have like a plaque score of like 800,
okay,
then you get a great risk reduction. But if your risk without a statin is, 1.2%, mm-hmm. and your risk, if your risk without a statin is 1.2% and your risk with a statin is 0.8%, yes, you get a risk reduction, but it's like such a small risk reduction in terms of absolute terms.
Yeah.
You know, so you have almost no risk, and then you, somewhat reduce your risk, but so inconsequentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I do that with patients sometimes when I give them a second opinion on whether they should be on a statin. And often we send them out reassured that they're not missing the boat by not being on a statin. It's no
right.
big whoop.
Right. Right. Wow. Interesting stuff. Joe, thank you for your comment. Wow.
And that takes us through part one.
Oh,
time
my.
Flies, but we're going to have to really boogie those questions in part mm-hmm. two. Let's not have any digressions. We'll go to part two with a full boat of questions.
Yeah.
What are we going to lead with?
Does NAD cause cancer?
Okay. We'll tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla and part of our Intelligent Medicine podcast series.